You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
The American Angle with William Hill.
Hello everyone and welcome back to another edition of the William Hill US Sports Podcast, and this is our pre-season NBA special as well, which we've kind of had to dedicate an entire podcast to because there is plenty to talk about. Stephen back alongside me ahead of the NBA season. This must be your favourite time of year as a big basketball fan yourself, Stephen. The NFL and the baseball's okay, but this is what it's all about for you.
Christmas is on the way. Christmas, it's in sight. I've been waiting for this literally since the end, since July 1st, and everything went down on free agency. This is what we've all been waiting for.
I mean, it has been one of the most incredible free agency, off-season, transfer window periods that we've ever seen in any sport. So many blockbuster moves. I can't recall anything like it in any sport that's been so captivating during the off-season, because there has been headline after headline been made with some of the big moves.
Exactly. It adds to the idea that the NBA is a 365-day league. Because there was news all throughout the summer.
Yeah, there was.
It's a case of we couldn't, like, I was glued to my phone, Twitter. I had all the big names on notifications waiting for a Woj bomb on who's going to move where. And some of the moves that just came out of completely nowhere, like, we'll get onto it in a minute. It's the guys that weren't even free agents that moved.
Yeah.
We couldn't believe it. And as a result, the landscape of the NBA has shifted completely. We no longer have the one team, we're just waiting to win it. Like we've had for so long, basically all through this decade. This is the first time we haven't had a presumptive favourite going into the season.
Yeah, absolutely. The betting is wide open. It's got a real competitive feel to it this season. I think I mentioned to you a couple of weeks ago that I feel through the first couple of weeks of the season, I'm still going to be surprised. There'll be a guy popping up in uniform that I didn't expect to be wearing that uniform, because it's been that hard to keep up. I'm sure I'll have missed one or two big moves that have just ended up only being the 15th, 20th biggest move of the offseason.
Exactly. I mean, I spent a good few hours last night trying to go through a crib sheet and work out most of the big moves, and I know people will probably say, you've missed out X, Y, and Z.
Yes,
and
exactly.
There is that many players. We will apologise. There will be a few mistakes. Hopefully there won't be, but we will have missed somebody off the list as to where they've gone, because I think it was over two-thirds of the league were free agents this summer, so there has been enormous turnover in a large number of teams.
Championship betting, first of all, for us, as we alluded to there, it's a much more different look to the outright betting than we used to, because it's wide open. The Clippers are currently favourites at 3-1. It has been the Lakers at various stages. They're 4-1 second in. The Bucks are 5-1. The Sixers are 8-1. It's 8-1 for the Rockets, 12-1 the Golden State Warriors, 16-1 for the Utah Jazz, 20-1 the Celtics and the Nuggets, 25-1 for the Nets. The reigning champions are out there at 25-1, the Raptors, 33-1 for the Pacers and the Trailblazers, 50-1. And at bigger prices for the rest of them. Obviously, the Western Conference looks absolutely stacked this year. The two LA teams are the two that are dominating the betting. Start with the Clippers, because they're currently a point shorter. We've had the Lakers being favourites, the Clippers being favourites. We had 7-2 joint favourites for a little while. It's the Clippers at the moment. Obviously, two huge acquisitions for them over the course of the summer. Kawhi Leonard, who led the Raptors to the chip last year, basically. And then, again, from kind of out of the blue, all of a sudden Paul George pops up there as well, who's come with Kawhi Leonard. Now, this is a team that made the playoffs last year and, you know, gave the Warriors a decent run in the playoffs. That was a six-game series, which nobody really expected. So the foundations were already there for the Clippers, led by Doc Rivers, and two huge acquisitions this year. It looked as though that they were going to get Kawhi. There was a few teams in the race for Kawhi, and then they do get him. And Paul George is there as well.
It's not a bad two-for-one offer,
yeah,
really,
exactly,
is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was an that was the real shock for a lot of us, was they managed to engineer this trade to get Paul George to the Thunder. So for those who didn't see it, it was a case of going to the Thunder, you had Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Danilo Gallinari, and seven draft picks, essentially. Yep. They had five first-round draft picks and two pick swaps, which is the biggest haul ever in NBA history, which is unbelievable. So basically, the Thunder, who had another big trade, which we'll get onto later when we discuss another favourite, just have set themselves for the future in terms of draft picks. But the amazing thing is the Clippers, they had, what was so appealing for Kawhi was they had this deep team of good, savvy NBA players. Because they didn't, it was like a lot of, not many teams, you can say, they didn't have a bad player on the roster. Yeah. They had, everyone could do a job in the NBA. They were all NBA players. And as a result, they haven't lost much of that depth in acquiring Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, which makes them a scary proposition. I mean, I've sort of got as a starting lineup for the beginning of the season, because remember, Paul George will miss the first month or two of the season as he had double shoulder surgery. Say that 10 times in a row. So at the start of the year, they're going to start probably Patrick Beverley, Landry Shamet, Kawhi Leonard, Mo Harkless, and Vika Zubats. But then off the bench, it's what they've got in reserve as well. So they've still got Lou Williams, who's the reigning sixth man.
Yep.
Montrezl Harrell, who's probably second behind him in sixth man voting.
Yeah, absolutely.
They've got Rodney Magruder, who's a useful NBA player who came from the Heat last year. Jermichael Green and Patrick Patterson. So they've got good depth in their team, which is what makes them so scary.
They were one of the best bench scoring teams full stop last year, largely because two of their best players started on the bench. But they must have led the league in bench scoring last year or been one of the top few
teams. I don't have that stat, but they will be. Once Paul George and Kawhi Leonard are in the starting lineup, the depth of scoring they have off the bench is what's going to be important for them, because the problem is you're not going to be able to, like most teams have, when their second team comes in, it's to keep them afloat so the starters can get the rest. With these guys in the regular season, potentially, their second team's just going to blow out the lead even further if they've got one to begin with. So it's going to be a scary proposition for the rest of the league once Paul George gets fit and they've all become acclimated with each other, how far this Clippers team can go. Because don't underestimate as well how good a coach Doc Rivers is at getting players to buy into this system.
Absolutely. The other team in LA, of course, the Lakers, they're 4-1, the second favourites, and they're obviously going to have big claims in the championship this year. We knew a year or so ago when they signed LeBron that they were going to be building him a potentially championship winning team. He missed the playoffs last year for the first year in over a decade, I think. You'd imagine they'll be back there this year. Brought Anthony Davis in, of course. Have the Lakers put in enough pieces around AD and LeBron to get a chip this year?
The problem for me is it's the sheer amount of turnover in their team.
Yeah.
Is it going to be able to hit the floor running when you've got such a dominant team in the same building as well?
Yeah, exactly.
Because, I mean, to think at one stage they only had three players under roster after the Anthony Davis trade went down, which was AD, LeBron and Kyle Kuzma.
Yeah.
That was it. The rest of the team has been rebuilt. They've had a few people come back, not necessarily the biggest names in Rondo, Caruso, JaVale McGee and Caldwell Pope. But they then managed to sign some good veterans outside of that. So they went out and they got Danny Green, another championship winner from last year from the Raptors. They signed DeMarcus Cousins, who it looked like it was a promise sign. Unfortunately, he's now going to be out for the year as well after tearing his ACL, and his career just seems to have hit a new low as well.
Yeah.
It's a sad thing to see. But they've also signed, as a result of his injury, they went out and signed Dwight Howard to a non-guaranteed contract. How his second run in LA will be interesting, because he seems to look a different player to what he used to do. He's also abandoned the D12 look. He's gone with the number, I think it was 59,
right.
Which is first time in Lakers history. I'm not sure why he's done that. Signed Quinn Cook from the Warriors as well.
Yeah.
Avery Bradley. So they've got enough pieces around them. It's just what it's going to look like. Because from the first few preseason games that I've watched, LeBron has actually, they're doing what LeBron has preached, which is the ball is going to go through Anthony Davis and it's his show to run.
Yes.
LeBron is obviously, LeBron James is LeBron James.
Yeah,
it's not like he's not going to get his touches.
Yes.
But the fact is, they're running him as the point guard and feeding Davis the ball, and it's almost going to be the Lakers are going to go as far as Davis carries them, which I think it might be a tenuous start depending on how well it meshes, but they will be there, I think, in the running come the end of the season.
On to the Bucks then at 5-1, who are the third favourites. And they could be the dominant force in the East this year. Obviously, last year they had the best regular season record, the reigning MVP, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and got themselves a little bit more playoff experience last year, which they're obviously lacking. I think I remember us talking about them versus the Raptors, and there was a dearth of playoff experience within that Milwaukee side. They're obviously going to learn some lessons from last year. Kept a lot of their star players, and obviously, you know, with the reigning MVP and the fact that their conference is little bit easier than the West, they're going to have a big say in the East this year and could be the dominant force in that conference.
They could well be. I mean, it's like you said, they've almost doubled down on the formula they had last year, which is surround Giannis with as many shooters as possible, as many playmakers that can give him the space but also take the pressure off him. His development, I think, is what's going to take them to the next step. If he can consistently hit a jump shot, we're not saying he has to be lights out,
yeah,
but enough to respect, make the defense respect it, it will open up the rest of the game for him. The big loss for them, I think, really is Malcolm Brogdon, who's gone to the Pacers, who was, unfortunately, he went into the playoffs injured. If he was fully fit throughout the playoffs, it might have been a different story for them. But they've doubled down on their basically recipe of just get as much shooting and as much spacing for Giannis as possible. They've added Kyle Korver, one of the best shooters of all time, we know that. Wesley Matthews, another 3-and-D player. Dragan Bender, who didn't have a great start to his career in Phoenix, but another 7-footer with shooting ability. They've now got the Twin Towers in Robin and Brook Lopez together, so expect them to maybe play a few minutes together, which should be entertaining regardless. Definitely. And they signed his younger brother as well in Thanasis Antetokounmpo.
Yes.
So I think it's largely going to be the same formula as last year for them. It's just, have they grown enough to be able to take it to that next step? Because when we look at the East, it is very much a two-horse race between them and the 76ers, who we're about to get onto next.
Yeah, they are the second horse in this race. They're 8-1, the Sixers, to win the championship this year. Kind of a funny season for the Sixers last year in many ways. Where do you stand on them coming into the new campaign? I feel a little bit 50-50 about them.
I think the major question for them is they have a huge starting five. Again, they have arguably one of the most talented starting fives in the league. The question for me is their floor spacing and how they're going to allow Joel Embiid to be Joel Embiid.
Yes.
Apparently, he's come into the league, as every NBA player says, he's come into the league in best shape of his life. Lost about 20 pounds, apparently. But the issue for them is, obviously, they lost Jimmy Butler to the Heat in a big trade. But another underrated loss for them, I think, is JJ Redick and how much he opened up the floor for them.
And talking about great shooters, I mean, does anyone catch and shoot in this league better than JJ Redick? Arguably not.
No one, but it's the way he can just, he's just in perpetual motion the entire time. He's always running around. And that dribble handoff that they had between him and Embiid, where you've got an absolute monster setting the screen and he just runs at full speed, catches, shoots. It was a lethal weapon for them. He scored 18 points a game. And that's the problem, I think, for the Sixers. Defensively, I think they're going to be amazing. With a starting five of Ben Simmons, Josh Richardson, Tobias Harris, Al Horford and Joel Embiid, they are going to be a dominant defense because of their size and ability to switch. And there isn't really a weak link. But the problem for me is that floor spacing, because we've all seen the video now of Ben Simmons hitting his first three since high school.
I was going to bring that up. Do you think he's added that to his game now, or do you think that was a flash in the pan kind of thing?
The jury's out until I see more. I'll believe it when I see it in a real NBA game, not against a Chinese team with a defender who's 5 feet off him and 2 foot smaller than him. Then I'll believe it when I see it. But it's, for me, it is what they've lost off their bench and what they've lost shooting-wise, it might be their undoing. But in terms of sheer talent, arguably they're the best team in the East and one of the best teams in the NBA. When you've got, if Simmons can unlock his potential, it'll be a scary proposition. If they realise that they need to play through Embiid, it'll be even better. Because they've got now the defensive, the shooting and defensive ability at the wings with Josh Richardson and Harris in the starting lineup. It's just that bench. A nice pickup for them in the draft with a trade with the Celtics was Matisse Thybulle, I thought, who was out of Washington State. But another rookie who's long-rangey, amazing wing defender. Another question for him, the problem for him, though, is his shooting. Is it going to be up to scratch in the NBA? So it keeps adding to that question, have they got enough at the shooting to open up the floor for their main weapons to really do the business for them?
Back to another team in the West now, in the shape of the Houston Rockets, who are the last team at a single-figure price. They're 8-1. Obviously, we know James Harden is going to be absolutely key to the things that Houston do again this year. They've added Russell Westbrook to the mix, who's obviously also departed Oklahoma City. And we were discussing this a couple of weeks ago, and you made the great point that there is only one ball. And in James Harden and Russell Westbrook, have they added two players whose style is a bit too similar and who are both going to want the handle quite a lot?
I think in the way they're similar is that the ball is always in their hands. They're the two highest usage percentages in NBA history.
Yeah.
But the issue for me is how the contrasting styles are going to work, because Russell Westbrook is a guy who rams the ball down your throat, is 100 miles an hour all the time, and he wants to push the ball and run and gun. But Harden is one of the slowest paces in the NBA. Mm-hmm. Obviously, when the ball's in his hands, it's a lot of dribble, step back, travel, foul, then shoot a three. So it's... I don't know how it's going to work between them because of the massive contrast in styles. And also, the problem is, it's a lot easier, I think, for Harden to play off the ball because he's such a good shooter. Westbrook off the ball, he had a horrific year from the field last year, shooting twos, threes, three throws, everything.
Yeah.
How is he going to adapt off the ball? The only way that they're going to get it to work is if he is slashing to the rim and attacking so that Harden can find him, because we know how good a passer Harden is. It's just how are the two players going to work. Outside of that, it is very much the same recipe as they had last year, just arguably upgrading Westbrook, Chris Paul, who's now on the decline really, for Russell Westbrook. But the problem is the pieces don't swap perfectly, because Westbrook is a very different player to Paul, whereas Paul was a good foil to Harden last year. So I don't think it's going to work personally, because it is such a style clash. I know they're all buddy-buddy. They used to play with each other in the Thunder once upon a time. Yeah. But let's be honest, Harden was not Harden at the Thunder.
Yes.
He was not unlocked until he went to the Rockets. Yeah. So it's very different, because it was all KD's show back then.
Yes.
So how it's going to work together, I don't know. But I don't think it will work in terms of leading to a championship, because I still think... I'm not sure how well it's going to work in the regular season, but I still believe that they are a team for the regular season, not the playoffs.
Okay. One final point on the Rockets. Maybe the game's just getting too easy for James Harden. What's with this new one-legged three shot that he's trying to incorporate?
I think he's just bored.
I mean? Has it become easy for him?
Either that, or he's really pushing the remit of how far can I take this travel?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
How long before the referees start calling me for a travel every single possession? And I don't know if he's trying to make a mockery of the rules, or this is what he's taken as the next evolution of shooting. But if he actually tries, he pulled it off in he attempted it in his first preseason game against, I think it was Shanghai.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Whether he attempts it in a real NBA game this season remains to be seen, but it'll be a ballsy move if he does.
Yes.
It'll be a very ballsy move if he does.
But I think he's got the confidence to try it. So
he's not lacking in confidence.
We'll see. Yeah. There's plenty of teams that we could discuss. We've got the Golden State Warriors at 12-1. Obviously, they have been the dominant force over years gone by. They have lost some of their players that obviously helped to build that dynasty, but not all of them. We've got the Utah Jazz, who, you know, obviously, hopefully going to get another good year from Donovan Mitchell. Such a good team defensively. We've got the Celtics, who've got rid of Kyrie Irving, but have added Kemba Walker. We've got the Nuggets, who had a big year last year. They're 20-1. The Nets, who are obviously going to have KD from next season. They won't have any KD for... all of this season, but they've added Kyrie Irving as well. The reigning champions are 25-1 in the Toronto Raptors. Talk us through some other teams at double figure prices that you see maybe having an impact this year.
Obviously with the Warriors, it's what position are they going to be in when Klay comes back around the All-Star break, because obviously he tore his ACL in game 6 of the finals. And it's a very much, it's a new, when we say it's a new look Warriors, it's almost like an old look Warriors, where it's hopefully, I'd love it to go back to the old style Warriors, where it is Steph Curry allowing to shoot as many threes as possible, and hopefully he'll break his record and shoot maybe 500 threes this year and make them. But it's going to be a run and gun Warriors, where it's up tempo. They've had a lot of turnover, because the team that they built their dynasty on, outside of Draymond, Clay, and Steph, is very much gone now. So it's a lot of new pieces. They've got D'Angelo Russell, who I think is going to fit in well into this system.
Yeah,
because he's very much the same kind of player.
I like that acquisition.
Yeah. He's not Clay Thompson, obviously, but he can fill in that role in the meantime. And then when he comes back, you've then got a three-guard offense, which in the new NBA, where it's going small ball and you need as much shooting as possible, I think will work well. But it's all about what position they're in. Can they stay afloat and be competitive until Clay comes back and then be in a decent position come the playoffs? Other teams, the Jazz, I'm high on the Jazz as a team, going into the playoffs, because the problem they had last year, they didn't have enough creators on offense. They had Donovan Mitchell and that was it.
Yes.
Whereas now they've gone out, they went out and got Mike Conley from the Grizzlies, which is a great acquisition. One of, if I'm honest with you, after all the hoopla of Kawhi, Paul George, Davis to LA,
yeah,
I think this is probably the most low-key and underrated trade of the summer, because Conley is such an underrated player because he's so understated and he doesn't make a lot of noise. He's such a good player to have the ball in your hands, and it takes a lot of pressure off Donovan Mitchell and allows him to be the pure scorer that he needs to be.
Yeah.
They added Bojan Bogdanovic as well, who's another big wing, gives them shooting and some creation off the dribble, to add to Joe Ingles, who can now just be the shooter and create when he needs to, and all funneled around that great defense of Rudy Gobert. They've added a few extra players off the bench, so they've got went out and got Jeff Green as well, another scorer. Ed Davis, who's a competent backup for Rudy Gobert. Obviously, he's not the same size, but it'd be good on defense. But I think it's an upgrade from what they had in Ricky Rubio and Kyle Korver as what they had as the predominant lineups from last year. So going into the playoffs, I think they're going to do. They're going to be going deep, but the problem is the West is so deep.
Yeah,
it's going to be a dogfight to get come out of the West. I'm not sure if you quite have the same quite as high of the Jazz as me, but I think they're a team to look for.
Yeah, I could certainly see that. Very interesting to know how high you rate that Mike Conley acquisition, because as you say, he wouldn't come into a lot of people's sort of top 10 acquisitions of the off season. So it'd be very interesting to see how they get on. In terms of a winner this year, have you got a pick?
In terms of a winner, I'm gonna have to really nail myself to a post here and be crucified. I'd like it to be the Jazz, but I don't think it's gonna happen. Okay. It's whoever comes out of the West in LA, and I think it's probably gonna be the Clippers. Not to be boring and go for the Fabs, but I'd like it to be the Lakers, because I'm always a fan of LeBron and I want him to do well. But it's just for me, it's the Clippers have better continuity coming out from last season. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they've got the new stars, but they've got a better supporting cast that's not been pulled together in one season, which is going to be the issue for me with the Lakers.
Yeah, I'm in agreement, really, which is quite boring, us both going for the Lakers. But when you add Paul George and Kawhi Leonard to a team who made the playoffs last year and have kept the core of that, bench scoring is great, great coach. They were already in a good place in terms of a postseason team last year, and now they've added two genuine superstars. So
yeah, definitely.
Indeed. We're going to take a quick spin through some of the divisional markets as well. You can check all these out on the William Hill website. I've got a raft of markets available. Obviously, six divisions to run through, starting with the Atlantic Division winner. And this is in the East. The Sixers are 4-7. The Celtics are 4-1. The Raptors are 5-1. The Nets are 7-1. The Knicks are 300-1. The 76ers are 4-7. Now, a lot of people would think this is a fairly competitive division with the Celtics, the Raptors, and even the Nets in there. Obviously, the Knicks aren't going to make much impact. That's reflecting the betting. You, however, think the Sixers are good value for their favourites tag in this division, and is arguably 4-7 a bit big in your mind?
I think it is, to be honest. I'm surprised it's that big a price, because I know it is a competitive division with the Celtics, Raptors, and Nets. I think the Celtics are too short a price in my estimations. I think the Raptors and the Nets are going to do better than the Celtics this year, because I just think there's a lot of problems going on with Boston now. They went from arguably one of the best positions to be in to now we don't know what's going to happen to them in the future. But the 76ers, I think just pure talent in the East, they're just going to run away. I think between them and the Bucks, they're going to run away with it in the standings. And I don't think any team in the Atlantic is going to come close to them. And I think 4-7 is a very generous price, a very big price.
Okay. Sticking in the East for the Central Division, I think this is probably the one we'll spend the least time on. 1-12 for the Bucks, 5-1 for the Pacers, 50-1 the Pistons, 100-1 the Bulls, and 500-1 the Cavs. Not only are the Bucks just going to win this division, I think all five of those teams are going to finish in market order, aren't they? I can't see how they don't finish in betting order.
I think that is literally the only question for me is where the Pacers are, where the Pacers are going to finish, because we don't know when Victor Oladipo is going to be back, because there's been a lot of conflicting reports. The players have come out and said he's looking fantastic, he's in great shape, but then some of the staff have said, well, but we don't know when he's actually going to be back. Some people have said it's potentially before Christmas. Some sort of said after the All-Star break. So when he returns, we don't know. And that will be the barometer for them of how far they can go in the playoffs. But Pistons are going to be pushing. It's going to be the same situation last year. They've added Derek.
Eighth, weren't they?
The again. Eighth last season. They've added Derek Rose. So they've got a bit more scoring, a bit more offensive punch. But it's the same. The problem is it's the sort of hamstrung in their salary cap as to what they can do going forward.
Because of Blake Griffin.
Well, it's not just that. The problem is, like, Andre Drummond's contract is up for renewal after this season. Yeah. All indications he's opting out of his current contract at the end of this year and becoming a free agent. And with such a weak free agent class this year, obviously it was fantastic last year, and then 2021 is the year of Giannis. So it's, they have to re-sign him, otherwise they're going to lose him for nothing and not be able to re-sign anything going forward.
Yeah.
And then the Bulls are going to be pushing for the playoffs. Where they're going to get there, I don't really know. They've got a few good young pieces, but it's not really much outside of that, and the Cavs are just going to be the Cavs.
Indeed. On to the Northwest then. This is an interesting division. The Jazz are even money. The Denver Nuggets are 11-8. The Trailblazers are 4-1. It's 100-1 for the Timberwolves and 250-1 for OKC, who are obviously in rebuild mode now for a couple of years. But the three big teams in this division all played well in the postseason last year. And despite you being such a big Jazz fan in terms of the outrights, you think they're opposable in the division betting?
And yes, might sound odd, but I think the Nuggets are going to win the division.
Yes.
Because remember, this is a regular season standings. Mm-hmm. And the Nuggets obviously finished second in the West last year. And I think they're going to finish roughly again in the same position this year. Playing in Denver, you forget how much of an impact it is, an advantage playing in Denver. It's the only city in altitude in the NBA.
Yep.
So they have a fantastic home record because they play that up and down pace and seems to struggle to run with them.
Yeah.
And that home court advantage is enough to give them a top four seed on its own, I think. They've very much got the same team as last year. Everyone's got better. The only two real the main acquisition for them was Jeremy Grant in a trade with the Thunder, another draft pick they picked up. But the basically Michael Porter Jr. coming back from injury, who was a rookie from last year, didn't play at all because of a back problem and then a foot problem and then a knee problem. He's been ravaged by injury his entire career, but if he can become the player he was expected to out of high school, he's going to be a very useful player for them on the wing, filling in that small forward role. And I think that 11-8, the Nuggets are the team to pick in the Northwest. The Jazz, I think, will go further than them in the playoffs, but I believe in the regular season, the Nuggets are going to have a better regular season record than the Jazz.
11-8 then for the Nuggets. On to the Pacific Division. I suppose we kind of spoke about the protagonists in this division. The Clippers are 8-13. The Lakers are 5-2. The Warriors are 9-2. The Kings are 50-1. It's 500-1 for the Phoenix Suns. And again, I guess we've spoken quite a bit about the three teams in this division. Are you with the Clippers for the division as well?
I believe so. I think just in terms of, because it's a lot less, the problem for them is the start, how well Kawhi is going to fit in, and then it might be a rocky period when Paul George comes back reacclimating into the lineup. But outside of that, I think they will. It's going to be a close race. I think 5-2 for the Lakers is a good price considering how close they are in the overall outright.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, you're right, actually.
So I think the Lakers at 5-2 is a very good price if you think they are going to win the division. But I do ultimately think the Clippers will have the better record. But let's be honest, when it comes to the playoffs, they're playing in the same building, so for the Lakers, I honestly don't think they care if they finish below the Clippers and face them in the playoffs, because it's all going to be in LA anyway in the same building, so it's not. And LeBron's always said he doesn't care if he's on the road or if he's at home.
True.
So it doesn't really matter, I don't think.
Indeed. He's backed that up on the court throughout his career as well.
Exactly.
Really. So, on to the Southeast, which features your Miami Heat at 8-11. The Orlando Magic are 6-4. The Atlanta Hawks are 7-1. 100-1 for the Charlotte Hornets. And it's 100-1 for the Washington Wizards. Obviously, Jimmy Butler, a big acquisition for Miami. And both themselves and Orlando Magic were part of a clutch of a few teams looking for the last couple of playoff spots in the East last season. Do you think Miami have moved on a little bit from that battle to be seventh seed, if you like?
I think they have now. I mean, it's a case of, as much as I love D-Wade, everything he did for the Heat, last year it was a celebration of D-Wade.
Big,
and almost...
big farewell tour.
It was, really? And we almost lost track. I say the Miami Heat.
Yes.
Lost track of almost making the... trying to fight for the playoffs, because so much time was devoted to D-Wade. But I think this year, the acquisition of Jimmy Butler, who is in his prime and is that go-to scorer that you need, because when you looked at the Sixers last season in the playoffs, when it got down to it in crunch time, it became Jimmy Butler ball.
Yeah.
Ball was in his hands and he was the one dominating the offense. So I think they've got that main scorer now. They've got rid of Hassan Whiteside. Thank goodness. He's now the Blazers' problem.
Yeah.
So there's that. Distraction's gone. They had a nice draft and they picked up Tyler Hero, who I think has got a chance of Rookie of the Year. I don't think he will win it, but he's going to have a very good rookie season because he's what the Heat are always looking for, which is a skilled two-guard shooter. And overall, I think they've just got the talent to win the division. It will be a close race, but they're not going to be in... Well, they've got the chance to be an upper echelon team in the East. It all depends how it comes together. I know Pat Riley's always on the lookout for another big trade because there's always been whispers going around that they're going for Chris Paul because they want those two big stars to put together. I don't think it could work because I think Chris Paul's sort of getting to that point now where injuries are going to hamper him too much. In terms of other teams in the division, the Magic are very much the same team as last year. The only real question for them is Markelle Fultz going to be able the team leader taking them forward. But going forward, I listened to this the other day, the Magic are in a great position to make a trade.
Right.
When you look at all their assets that they've got a wealth of good young players that are serviceable NBA players, and they've got veterans on handy contracts that are easy to move. So I wouldn't be surprised if, and they've got all their draft picks as well. They've only surrendered one, I think, in the next 4 years, which was for Markelle Fultz. So they could be in position to make a big move for someone. Obviously, that won't happen until the new year when everyone becomes available to trade. So they could be a chance. And then the Hawks are going to be a plucky team that are going to look to fight to make the playoffs. Trae Young made great strides at the end of last season. They did well in the draft as well. They picked up DeAndre Hunter. They picked up... Sorry, I'm going to have to check this because they had that many players. DeAndre Hunter and Cam Reddish, sorry, was the other one they picked up. They also acquired Evan Turner from the Blazers, who's going to be a great leader for their bench unit as well. So I think they've got a good young team, but they're just 1 year too soon, I think, for them. Maybe next year they'll be pushing for the playoffs.
Okay.
Be in the playoffs, but this year they'll be around that sort of like 9, 10, 11 spot like they were last year.
Fair enough. And lastly then, the Southwest, where the Rockets are the 2-7 favourites. The Spurs are 4-1, the Mavs are 14-1, the Pelicans are 14-1, of course featuring Zion Williamson this year. And it's 250-1 for the Grizzlies. I'm sure you'd like to get the Rockets beat in this division, Stephen, but with your betting head on, is there any taking them on, really? Particularly as you said, there'll be a good regular season.
Yeah, there'll be a good
postseason.
This is a problem. This is the old head versus heart thing.
Exactly.
The head says Rockets, but the heart says... I honestly think if you want an outside bet on any of the divisions, the Pelicans and the Mavs at 14-1 are the two to take. The Mavericks, I'm high on because I think Luka is the future in the NBA. We saw what he did last year, and even at the end of the year when the Mavs were tanking, he still played well.
Yeah.
And with them going forward, and now he has Porzingis, obviously we haven't seen Porzingis be him for a year and a half now since his injury. But from all early indications with them two on the floor, they look great together because they have that game, the games that will mesh.
It's going to be exciting to see that.
Exactly. So I think the Mavs are a potential playoff team as well. So both of these teams are going to be pushing for the playoffs. Whether they make it or not remains to be seen. But the Pelicans, they don't have a weak player on the roster. It's very much like we were saying the Clippers last year. They've just got a great raft of talent all from basically spots 1 through 15 because they've got, as a starting lineup, Lonzo Ball, Drew Holiday, Brandon Ingram, Zion, and Derek Favors. But then even off the bench, they've got JJ Redick, Josh Hart. They had some great pickups in the draft in Nikhil Alexander-Walker, who's Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's cousin, but who was underrated in the draft and went quite low, fell to the Pelicans, so it would be a great option for them. Etuan Moore, Jahlil Okafor, Nicole Melli, who's another European shooter, add to their talents. So I think they've got the potential to make the playoffs. It's again for them how it's all going to mesh together, and are they going to be able to hit the ground running and not lead themselves too far back in the standings by the time it all clicks for me. But I like the Mavs and the Pelicans at 14-1 if you want an outside shot to dethrone the Rockets.
Okay, good stuff. We've got loads of betting, by the way, ahead of the NBA season already on the website. Absolutely stacks to get involved with. You can take each team's wins for the year, over and under. We've got loads of hashtag your odds that are already on there as well, looking ahead to the future. We've got Rookie of the Year, of course. We've got markets on the assist leaders, on the regular season points leaders, the rebound leaders as well. MVP betting will be available as well.
It is on the website.
Right, yeah, it has been there, but
It's on the website. It just takes a little bit of finding at times, unfortunately, but it is available. Of which
you trade as love hiding stuff on the
on the website. Pinning this on the traders. it is available. Of which the favorite again to repeat is Giannis, but I think this is a good market because you've got some good outside picks to go for. So who would your regular season MVP be?
I think if they can get it clicking, then Joel Embiid for me is a big price at 16-1. We saw flashes of him last season looking like an absolute superstar at times.
Yeah.
And I think if things can click into place for Philly, which I think is a big if, but I think that's kind of factored into his price really.
Yeah.
At 16-1. But I'm very excited to see how he goes this year, and he'd be a sporting bet for me at 16-1. As much as I'm a huge Giannis fan, and I think things get a plan, barring accidents, I think he'll be the MVP again.
To me, I think my pick's going to be Anthony Davis at 8-1. I know LeBron and AD are both 8s, which I think is... I don't quite understand why they're both 8-1, because we've seen... But this is across the market, not just with us.
Yeah.
That Anthony Davis, for me, is too big a price, because we know the ball's going to go through Anthony Davis. If the Lakers are a top 2-3 seed in the West, even if they do trail behind the Clippers, I think Davis is going to get votes, because we've said for years that Davis is an MVP candidate.
Yeah, of course.
And he has the ability. Even last year, before the trade request, he was having an MVP type season, but then obviously it all went to pot when he requested the trade and just didn't play. Mm-hmm. So I think this could be the year that he claims his first MVP title. He's 8-1 at the minute. So in terms of your betting order, if you want just for to show the entire picture, Giannis is the fav at 3-1. Steph, just close behind him, 7-2. Harden, 7-1. LeBron, AD, 8s. Kawhi's 10. Joel Embiid is 16s. Nikola Jokic is also at 16-1 if you want another big man. Russell Westbrook, 20. Russell Westbrook, Paul George, both 20s, and then bigger prices elsewhere.
Mm. That's the MVP betting. Just before we wrap up then, we've obviously got Rookie of the Season, likely to be Zion, his odds on. Obviously, there are some other nice rookies in that draft, but if he picks up where he left off at Duke, that's a done deal, isn't it, really?
I'd say so, yeah. The issue, for me, the guys outside of that, so Ja Morant at 4-1 is a nice price, because he's going to have the ball in his hands so much in Memphis, and he is going to be the offense.
Yeah.
The pick I still have outside of that is Michael Porter Jr. at 20-1. If he can put it together and be a good functional player for the Nuggets, I think it's getting to the point now where you're not just looking at numbers. If you contribute to a winning team, it adds to your Rookie of the Year status, and I think that's why Zion's going to run away with it, because the Pelicans are going to be competitive, and a lot of it is going to be on the back of him.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, even watching him in the preseason, he's just been amazing to watch. Just athletically, he's so efficient at scoring, because he just bullies his way to the rim, but it's going to be great.
Up against the reigning two-time defensive player of the year the other night in a preseason game,
and he just
up against Rudy Gobert, and he just posturizing him.
He just bullies through him, exactly. Yeah. If you want to go for the Miami Heat rookie for Rookie of the Year, it's 33-1. It won't happen, but
you mentioned
just,
it earlier on Tyler
just
Hero,
a nice pop. You'll get some good numbers, but I think Zion is the definite pick for me. A
couple of other possible done deals. I suppose Andre Drummond's going to be the rebound leader again,
yes.
And James Harden's probably going to be the point scoring leader.
I don't think it will be James
really?
Harden. I believe it's going to be Steph Curry.
Okay. Oh, so with a switch to the Warriors.
Exactly. Okay. So the pricing for that market is, so as well, you'd imagine that when we talk about the rebound leader, Drummond's 1-2. Outside of that, you go up to 8-1 for the second favourites. Your points leader, you'd imagine Harden would be short price. However, we've gotten priced up at 9-4 as the favourite. Steph Curry's 11-4 behind him, and I think Steph is going to be the shout, because it is going to be like his unanimous MVP season when he's going to get to jack all the shots. You've got D'Angelo Russell next to him, but he's going to have the ball in his hands a lot. Even when we watched the first preseason game when they faced the Lakers, I think in the first quarter he had 16 points because he just took three after three after three after three after three. And we're going to see Steph Curry back to pre-KD Steph.
Okay. That's what I think. I can see that. Really looking forward to tip-off. We're not too far away now. We'll be talking plenty more basketball throughout the course of the season. Thank you very much for all your picks, and looking forward to tip-off.
Pleasure. Can't wait.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.